This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
In a tight labor market, do unions have more leverage?
They're just seeing all this frustration come out of the pandemic, and that there's sort of an opportunity that's been presented with the tight labor market to begin to express some of that frustration and to act on it.
And Google CEO Sundar Pichai is calling for a global framework for cybersecurity. Plus, remembering the nation's first Black Secretary of State, Colin Powell. It's Monday, October 18th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell has died at the age of 84. Powell was a retired four-star general and former White House National Security Advisor who went on to become the nation's first Black Secretary of State. His views on military conflict were popularized in the media as the Powell Doctrine, a national security outlook that held that war should be a last resort with clear objectives, strong public support, and decisive action. That idea faced its biggest test during the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003. Powell left the State Department in 2005 after Bush's re-election and became a critic of the U.S. handling of the war on terror. In a statement on Facebook, Powell's family said his death was due to complications from COVID-19 and that he had been fully vaccinated. According to his longtime aide, Powell was being treated for multiple myeloma, a type of cancer that is known to weaken the immune system. Health business editor Jonathan Rockoff says the risk of a breakthrough case is a lot higher for seniors and for those with compromised immune systems.
People who are 65 and older, their immune defenses don't work as well as they did when they were 20 years old or 30 years old. Your immune system loses some power over time. And then when we're talking about people with weakened immune systems, it's because their immune systems are weak that they don't mount the immune defense generated by vaccination like they would if they had healthy immune systems. So they're much more at risk of a breakthrough case. Colin Powell, he had a combination of these two things, right? He was both elderly and he was getting treated for multiple myeloma, a blood cancer. And we know that many cancer treatments, weaken the immune system as part of the treatment, right? And so that could put you at higher risk of a breakthrough case.
Google CEO Sundar Pichai is calling for coordinated government action on cybersecurity. In an interview for the Wall Street Journal's Tech Live event, Pichai told WSJ Editor-in-Chief Matt Murray that world governments should develop international legal standards, a sort of tech equivalent of the Geneva Convention.
Governments on a multilateral basis, the G20s, etc., need to put it up higher on the agenda.
You're calling for regulation on that front.
I'm calling for global frameworks. You're going to need it for areas like cybersecurity, just like we have it in the real world, you know. And if not, you're just going to see more of it because, countries would resort to those things.
Pichai is also calling on the U.S. to invest more in innovation, especially amid rising competition from China. We'll have more highlights from our Tech Live conference all this week on our sister podcast, Tech News Briefing, and of course on WSJ.com. A highly anticipated report from the Securities and Exchange Commission has found that while a trading frenzy in shares of GameStop earlier this year tested markets, it didn't expose major weaknesses in stock market infrastructure. The price of GameStop soared from less than $20 at the end of 2020 to an intraday high of $483 on January 28th. The agency attributed the episode primarily to individual investors using platforms like Reddit to exchange ideas and strategies. U.S. stocks wavered in trading today as investors weighed strong earnings reports with a threat of rising inflation and supply chain disruptions. As we reported this morning, China's economy grew just 4.9% in the third quarter from a year earlier. That's down 3 percentage points from the previous quarter. U.S. stocks ultimately ended the day mixed. The Dow dropped 36 points, or a tenth of a percent. The S&P 500 gained 0.3%, and the Nasdaq was up 0.8%. And Apple unveiled its newest technology at a streamed event today. That includes two new MacBook Pro laptops powered by processing chips designed by Apple. The company says their advantage is high performance while maintaining power efficiency over the chips they used to use made by Intel. Apple also brought back some older MacBook features, like HDMI and SD card slots, and the MagSafe magnetic power plug. And the company revealed the third generation of its wireless AirPod earbuds. Coming up, how unions are benefiting from a tight labor market.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Hollywood narrowly avoided a production shutdown this weekend after film and television employees reached a tentative agreement with studios and streaming services. And workers at farm and construction equipment maker Deere held a walkout last week, the first strike in more than three decades. And there has been similar action at snack producer Mondelez. So why do labor unions seem like they're having a moment? Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal agriculture reporter Jesse Newman. Hi, Jesse. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Jesse, a lot has been changing in the labor market as employers are trying to hire in a tight market. How has this changed the playing field for unions seeking better protections for employees?
So this is the moment where union leaders think that they have an opportunity both to increase their membership and then also start to advocate and secure gains for the members that they already have. So, you know, we're seeing across the board, across a number of different industries, that there is quite a bit of union organizing and union activity going on. And so a lot of labor leaders see this as a time, given the tight labor market, but also given the pandemic, that they, you know, can really make some gains and sort of claw back what they may have lost in recent decades.
And you spoke to a lot of labor leaders. What else are you hearing from them about this moment?
So a lot of them will say that the roots of this sort of groundswell of frustration that they're seeing among workers has its foot in the pandemic, and that workers are exhausted. So those who have stayed in the labor market, those who, you know, came into work, often worked on the front lines during the pandemic and just, you know, worked throughout, that they are tired and that more and more is being asked of them, especially because, you know, there are fewer people in the labor market right now, that they're having to do more and work longer hours. And they are beginning to, you know, begrudge what they see as low pay, and that they want more from their employers. They want, you know, better wages, better benefits. They want, you know, more protections on the job. They want to be sure that, you know, employers are looking out for their health and well-being. And, you know, they want more job protection. And so these are folks who, you know, are really sort of beginning to feel as though it's up to them to stand up for themselves and advocate for themselves. This is what union leaders say, that they're just seeing all this frustration come out of the pandemic, and that there's sort of an opportunity that's been presented with the tight labor market to begin to express some of that frustration and to act on it.
And we have had some pretty high profile conflicts in the headlines in recent days. Over the weekend, the film and television industry reached a last minute deal with the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. And last week, workers at farm and construction machinery company Deere walked out for the first time in 35 years. Jesse, are we seeing more of this kind of union action really across industries here?
Labor leaders say yes. They will say that this is pretty widespread. You know, each of the different industries, the particulars are different. So, for example, with the International Alliance of Theater Stage Employees, that was a pretty interesting case where you had a lot of film and TV production that was just shut down for 6 months during the pandemic. And now that the restrictions are easing, there's just this huge demand from studios to make all sorts of film and TV. And so, you know, the communications director of IATSE, that union, said, you know, folks are just being pushed to the brink. And, you know, because just, there's all of this demand for film and television. And then, you know, similarly, at Deere just last week when that strike began, you know, these folks are pushing for higher wages and expanded benefits, but you're seeing efforts to unionize at Starbucks and at Amazon. You're seeing strikes at some different food companies, Mondelez International, cereal maker Kellogg. There's some mine workers on strike in the South as well. I mean, it does seem as though a lot of the frustrations that the labor leaders talk about is across industry.
There are also downsides for staging walkouts during this time as well. What have you heard from critics about how union action could backfire?
Yeah, so there are definitely critics of this moment. And, you know, they're concerned that these strikes and walkouts and the action that's taking place is really doing harm to industry. So that this is, you know, coming at a time when there's all sorts of supply chain difficulties, and that these walkouts are just really counterproductive and are going to, you know, wind up hurting small businesses, potentially costing jobs and just, you know, exacerbating supply chain challenges throughout the economy at a time when, you know, everybody in their view should be working together to get the economy back on track.
Jesse, what can you tell us overall about the strength of unions or the makeup? How has that changed in recent years?
So union membership has been on a downward slide for decades. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons behind that. But, you know, union membership, from the reporting that union members made up about close to 11% of the American workforce last year. And that is well down from its peak in the early 1980s, when it was about 20% of the U.S. workforce. And so, you know, labor leaders see this as a moment when they can begin to reverse that. And as I said, sort of make up some of these gains at a moment where companies are vulnerable. So one of the things that multiple labor leaders pointed out is that there is a pro-labor president in President Biden that's in the White House, and they view that as a real advantage. And they also point to a recent Gallup poll that shows, I believe it was 68% of Americans support unions at this moment in time, and that is up now. You know, there are, again, these critics who say, yes, companies across industry are dealing with extreme frustration among industries, but, you know, they are skeptical that unions are the answer. And in fact, a labor relations attorney that we spoke to for the story said, you know, look, employees are really, really frustrated, but they now have, you know, they've now got platforms like Facebook and other means to both express their concerns and then also try to, you know, agitate collectively to secure, you know, to secure what they want. And so, you know, there are those who think that there's other answers out there beyond unions and that this is not some new heyday for labor.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Jesse Newman. Jesse, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks so much.
And finally, there's a familiar chill in the air that could have you reaching to turn up the thermostat, but you might want to give that a second thought. With natural gas futures reaching a 7-year high, heating bills are expected to skyrocket this winter, up to 30% higher. Our reporter JJ McCorvey has some tips to help mitigate some of those costs.
One of the first things you can do is, for example, call an HVAC contractor and have this process performed called the Manual J, which calculates the amount of heating and cooling output required for your home based on the size of the home, where the walls and windows and stuff are. And, you know, this process can cost anywhere from $100 to around $1,000, depending on the size of the building.
But JJ says there are cheaper fixes to be more energy efficient, like covering your windows with plastic or getting one of those draft blockers that kind of look like snakes to keep the warm air in and the cold air out. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.